Yes, good morning. Still morning. Good morning, everybody. I want to make one clarification because it's something that somebody asked me after the last time you made a presentation about this project in Brussels. This is not a project that's going to go on to 2020. It's not a 12-year project, I'm glad to say. It's a 3-year project. So by 2011, roughly, we might then say something about where the EU should be going. But I just want to clarify that because that can sometimes be a misapprehension. I'm particularly concerned with one stream in this project, which is the new actors in development. And within that, my own interest is China and India. There are a lot of new actors, a lot of new donors, a lot of new, whatever you want to call them. First of all, of course, they're not all new. In fact, many of these actors have been around for quite a long time, but we see their importance and their relevance to development and the need to engage with them as being new. But those actors, there's a paper by Kragelund that's just circulating around, gave a presentation on a different paper in the previous session, but the paper that's circulating, and he identifies new actors in terms of Eastern Europe, the EU members, new EU members, some of which are part of the OECD, some of which are not, Latin America, the Middle East, parts of Asia, China and India just being part of that. So there's a very large range of new actors. I'm particularly interested in China and India as new actors, and so I'm going to say a little bit about that. So even though China and India are not new in terms of development, if we think of, you know, we go back to the 1950s and 1960s, certainly the way they're acting as development actors and their particular interests and the way that they're pursuing those interests, particularly in Africa, I think is new. And that's the thing that draws to our attention. Now, obviously, when we think about China, in particular China, then the first temptation is to start to complain and start to highlight the way in which China is not playing the DAC game and is closely aligned to doubtful regimes such as Robert Mugabe's Zimbabwe and the rest. Issues around governance. I'm going to ignore all of that because I think that that's played out a lot. I personally am not convinced it's too productive. And I want to talk about some other issues in relation to China and India. First point I want to make, quite simply, is of course that the interest in China as a development actor, particularly in Africa, is still out of all proportion to China's impact, direct impact in Africa. China still accounts for less than 10% of Africa's trade, although it's rising pretty rapidly. You know, China's the third largest trading partner with Africa. If you count the EU as one, then the US and the EU together are massive trading partners, and China is still a distant third. One calculation I saw recently, a paper by John Wally and others, in the NBER series, China accounts is for less than 2% of FDI into Africa. Sheila's waving at me, you're not sure, but it's not 20%. Whether it's 2% is another matter, but it's still, you know, there are lots of other countries that are investing lots of money in Africa, and they're investing much more money in Africa now than they did 10 or 15 years ago. So, you know, if we put it in context, it's not that, you know, Africa has been discovered by China when everybody else is ignoring it in terms of investment opportunities. Just not true. Third, that China certainly as an aid donor in terms of overseas development assistance is probably, maybe quite substantial in Africa, actually, but not more than 10%, we think, at the moment. And, you know, we think of China as sucking out natural resources from Africa, which it is. Natural resources, oil, minerals are a very, very large proportion of China's Africa's exports to China. Actually, a smaller proportion of Africa's exports to China than Africa's exports to the USA. The EU is different. The EU has more varied import profile from Africa, but the US looks like China, looks pretty much like China in terms of its what it imports from Africa. Even AGOA notwithstanding, AGOA has not made any difference to that. You know, the Africa Growth Opportunity. So So, you know, there is nothing really outstanding on these basic figures about the extent and nature of China's involvement in Africa. But I think that the reason why we're so interested in China, and I think we will become interested in India as India pulls together its policy towards Africa, it does have an Africa policy, it is developing that policy, it's putting in resources into, putting money into obtaining resources from Africa and investing in agriculture as well as mining and natural resources, and we will see a higher Indian profile. Although, of course, the Indian economy is just much, much smaller, much less outward-oriented than China, and so the numbers are very different. But I think that from the point of view of development cooperation, there are two very distinct reasons why we're interested in these new donors in China and India, in particular. And the first is that, you know, we see that, you know, leaving aside the issue of good governance and the rest, that there may be lessons that we want to learn from China. Lessons about project aid, how to manage it, whether we need to know whether China is just repeating the problems of DAC donors that encountered in the past. I think that we want to learn from China in terms of how China has managed to reduce poverty to such a greater extent within China itself, whether it's managed, how it's managing its own regional inequalities, etc. I think also we need to be, when we're thinking about development cooperation, we have to bear in mind that the new donors are important not only for coordination issues around aid, but also for the production of global public goods that are also relevant to the development program. We can't think about a climate change agreement without involving China, for example. I mean, that's absolutely clear. And that's quite a big challenge, because you have to recognize issues of equity, issues of capacity, and the differences between China and the EU, while at the same time thinking about how to collaborate over the production of these global public goods. So, you know, China and India pose certain challenges because they go about development in a different way. They have different priorities, they don't play by the DAC rules, and that really poses challenges about how to manage that, and also whether or not it tells us something about the way we're doing aid that we need to learn about and possibly change. And so that's one of the reasons why we're so interested in China and India. However, for me, the more interesting question, one that I hope this project will investigate, although we haven't sort of talked about it fully, is that I think really that China and India raise questions for the EU that have always been there for the EU, or that are there for the EU, that the EU has to face up. It merely highlights the fact there are questions that even if China and India didn't exist, the EU would have to face in terms of its development cooperation. And the reason, for example, why China and India highlight these issues is that they don't split off aid from trade, from investment, from financial flows. And so, you know, the Chinese, have this self-presentation as not being a donor, not being a former colonial power, and therefore they don't, you know, they really dislike being called a donor, even when in the next paragraph Hu Jintao says, and we will do send so many people to Africa for this, and provide so much here, and, you know, so they kind of, there's a lot of giving, and a lot of giving which is recognisably the kind of thing the donors say they do when they give. So Chinese still don't like the term. But the thing is that the Chinese, and I think also the Indians, you know, very much see aid as part of a broader package of economic relationships involving trade and investment. And so whereas the Western community have sort of tried to define ODA and split it off and say, you know, this is an aid relationship and we have these broader relationships, you know, the Chinese and the Indians don't do that. And I think that there's a big issue about whether it's sustainable within the European Union, you know, how much the aid agenda as opposed to an economic and political relationships agenda is sustainable. And I think this is an issue which is actually taxing governments across Europe and also in the European Commission, though, that this is the big challenge. And the problem is, if you say, well, look, aid involves climate change, aid involves trade, aid involves agriculture, aid involves security, development involves energy, but our relationships with developing countries as a whole involve all of those things, then how do we put development cooperation within that much broader context, which is really what I think the programme is thinking about, and the programme's highlighted climate change and energy. But the reason for highlighting climate change and energy is precisely because they're not, you know, narrowly defined aid cooperation. But if you say, I can remember, talking to a senior person at my aid ministry, the Department of International Development, about China and India, and this person, who is now very senior, turned around to me and said, look, this is really interesting, but look, our basic function is to give out money. We're not really very good at doing anything else. The current development minister, Douglas Alexander in the UK, has now said that he wants DFID to be a development ministry rather than an aid ministry. But if you are a development ministry, then you have to ask yourself the question, how do you link to the foreign ministry? How do you link to the agriculture ministry? How do you link to whoever's in charge of trade? How do you link to your treasury or finance ministry? And I think these are difficult questions. And so one option is to say, well, we're going to narrowly define development cooperation in terms of aid. And the implication is that you focus on an increasing, if development policy is successful, you focus on an increasingly small number of poor countries. So it becomes an Africa agenda rather than a global agenda. Or you say, well, how do we think of development cooperation as being part of our relationship with developing countries, which is a much broader relationship? And I personally think that the way the world is going in terms of, a world which seems to be, a world which I think is becoming meaner, a world where shortages are putting a lot of pressure, where we see energy, climate ceiling, food, where there's increasing competition for what appear to be expensive and possibly scarce resources, then how do we put aid into, a world where those issues and competition over those resources have become more acute? And I hope that the programme will examine those issues and really thinking about the EU reflecting on what development cooperation means in the context of a much broader set of relationships with developing countries. Thank you.